This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Hello, this is your Radio EcoShock update on unfolding events at the Fukushima nuclear disaster. It is Japan Atomic Emergency Bulletin number 5 for Monday, March 28th in North America, Tuesday in Japan. Disturbing developments continue. A full 17 days after the earthquake and tsunami shut power off to 6 reactors at Fukushima Daiichi, and long after 3 reactor buildings blew up, the Japanese government finally announced they would test for plutonium around the plant. That's the most dangerous radioactive substance. Reactor number 3 was burning a type of plutonium-laced fuel called MOX. These hyper-radioactive fuel rods were in both the reactor and in the spent fuel ponds. A leak in the fuel ponds caused water boil-off and suspected uncovering of the spent fuel rods. And various government sources say the fuel rods within the reactor were also uncovered and suffered a partial meltdown. In the past few days, extremely high levels of radioactive water have been found in reactor number 3 and in soil in a trench outside the buildings. Reactor number 3 has been steaming or burning for weeks. Despite the pronouncement of various experts, I always suspected plutonium was bound to be released into the environment. The government was under increased pressure to at least take a look, since independent measuring teams, including one from Greenpeace International, had reached the area. The Greenpeace team, led by radiological expert Jan van de Poot, found radiation levels up to 10 microsieverts per hour in Iatate Village, 40 kilometers northwest of the Fukushima nuclear plant. This is 20 kilometers outside the official evacuation zone. More about that in a minute. Greenpeace has not so far reported finding plutonium, although their test results are still being processed. Now, Voice of America News reports on Monday, March 28th, quote, "Officials say evidence of highly radioactive plutonium has been detected in the soil in 5 locations around Japan's earthquake-disabled nuclear reactor," end quote. The plant operators TEPCO told the Japanese press service Kyoto they think plutonium was leaking from nuclear fuel rods in the damaged reactors. Yesterday, an official from NISA, the Nuclear Industrial Safety Agency of Japan, Mr. Hideyoko Hishiyama, told a morning news conference, quote, "The level of radiation is 1,000 millisieverts. It is certain that it comes from atomic fission." So fission, an atomic reaction, is going on at the site despite the alleged shutdown by fuel rods. Of course, TEPCO says the plutonium levels were not high enough to be a risk to human health. They always say that. But we know tiny, tiny amounts of plutonium can cause cancer or death if eaten or ingested. This is also an alarming development for the international community, including North America, if a storm or common winds carry plutonium to North America or throughout the Northern Hemisphere, water supplies and farms could be polluted for more than 100,000 years. That is not happening now. We have no record of that, although I don't know if North Americans are even testing for plutonium. But you don't need to worry about that right now. I'm just saying it is possible. Repeatedly, Japanese officials say they do not know how radioactive water is escaping from the reactors or from the spent fuel ponds. According to David Lochbaum from the Union of Concerned Scientists, this is partly because the main reactor control rooms are not operational. The gauges and computers they need are not working. We all saw the video and announcements that power had been restored to reactors 1 through 4 and the lights were on in the control rooms. Japanese TV ran a picture of an operating control room, but you had to look fast to see the word recorded on those images. At the Union of Concerned Scientists website, Lochbaum analyzes a real photograph of the current control room. Yes, some fluorescent lights are working in the ceiling, but the clock is not working. The computer screens are all blank. Critical information systems are all dark. In fact, the good news, restored power announcement now seems like a bit of kabuki theater meant to reassure the nervous public and the world. None of the built-in cooling systems of the 4 damaged reactors are working. They are still spraying things with fire hoses. Extra pumps have been brought in to try and remove some of the highly radioactive water that is preventing any further work on these plants. In some reactors, they can pump some of this dangerous water into a holding area called the condenser tank. In others, that tank is already full, and TEPCO doesn't know where to put it. Meanwhile, even more tests further away from the reactor show a lot of highly radioactive water is coming up in the sea. This may be partly running off from the constant spraying, or it may be cooling pipes deep underground connected to the sea. You have no doubt noticed there are no cooling towers at the Fukushima reactors, as seen on American nuclear plants. The Fukushima Daiichi plant gets cooling by circulating water from pipes running out to the sea. These may now be leaking, possibly directly from a damaged reactor. The New York Times reported one reactor had a crack in the containment vessel, according to an inside source, and then that story disappeared. Various government officials have said at least two reactors have damaged containment vessels and may have been melted down, and then those statements are contradicted by other officials. Now they claim not to know. We do know that highly radioactive materials that could only come from recent atomic fission or fuel rods melting in the ponds are reaching the atmosphere, the plant buildings, and the sea. Truthfully, I can't see any evidence of progress to contain the deterioration of all four reactors. The passage of time should mean the nuclear fuel rods in the reactors are cooling, but not if the exposed rods have melted, or if a nuclear reaction has restarted, or if they just can't cool down the remaining heat. The International Atomic Energy Agency and the Prime Minister of Japan have both stated this remains a grave and ongoing situation. There doesn't seem to be a way to make this stop in the short term or possibly even in the long term. There are technical reasons why entombing the four reactors may not be possible, as was done at Chernobyl. Even if such a giant sarcophagus, which would be larger than the pyramids of Egypt, were possible, trying to build it in a quake-stricken Japan could take months or years, and it may not last, and it may spread more radioactivity. You can't just dump sand or cement on those hot fuel rods in the spent fuel ponds, for example. Meanwhile, I'm seeing the first signs of a permanent exclusion zone, similar to that around Chernobyl, the nuclear meltdown in the Ukraine. The Chief Cabinet Secretary of Japan has gone on national TV to forbid those residents returning into the zone who were excluded in the first 20 kilometers. A reporter then says this has the force of national law and talks about the military and the police. As Japanese media goes, generally explaining the position of the government, I would read this as the first step of imposing a military-protected no-go zone at the 20-kilometer mark around the plant. That piece of Japan may be lost to human use. I envision the exclusion zone getting larger over time, depending on how bad the reactors go and the amount of radiation. We may see a larger zone where highways or trains are allowed to pass through, but no one will be allowed to live there or farm. A worst-case scenario, Japan could be split in two, the northern islands and the southernmost tip of Honshu. The center would be perhaps a narrow isthmus of connecting rail and highways running along the west coast as far as possible from the most contaminated east coast. That would be hardly recognizable as Japan. Here are excerpts from a transcript of NHK World Japanese TV on Sunday night in North America, March 27th. The host says, Chief Cabinet Secretary Yukio Edano has strongly urged residents within 20 kilometers of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant to not enter the area or return to their homes. Voice of live translator as Edano speaks, once again, that the area could be contaminated and there is a risk of going back to the area. So unless there is an instruction never to go back or enter the restricted areas, end quote. Host, we are now joined by reporter Yamasaki, voice of translator Yamasaki. Now, there was a melting of the nuclear reactor, and also Mr. Edano talked about the 20 kilometers evacuation range from the nuclear power plant. And then Yamasaki continues, yes, and this 20 kilometers range was under the evacuation instruction right after, immediately after the earthquake struck. And people living in this area had to leave this area with only things that they were wearing at the time. Yamaki goes on to say the Japan Self-Defense Force and police have spotted some residents returning to get things from their home, despite the risk of radiation. And Yamasaki continues, as translated, and of course this instruction is based on the national law, so the residents must follow this instruction, end quote. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. It seems likely that the cars, homes, and personal possessions of people inside that 20-kilometer zone around Fukushima, well, they may all be too radioactive to be allowed to come out. That zone may remain empty for decades, if not generations. No one will be allowed to return, I think. The Japanese nuclear evacuees may start with just the clothes on their backs. It's very, very sad. As we have heard with today's revelations about plutonium and high radiation being detected at least 40 kilometers in the soil from the plant, the final no-go zone may be much larger. Just how much of the small island of Japan will be lost for human use depends upon further developments at Fukushima. If the workers, by some miracle, manage to restore interior cooling to both the reactors and the fuel ponds, while mopping up pools of high-level waste and stopping all the leaks, the exclusion zone may settle to the 50 miles or 80 kilometers set by the United States government more than a week ago. That would cut both important road and rail transportation links between Tokyo and northern Japan. All that would have to run up the west coast unless the government allows a transit corridor through the radioactive zone. If there is a storm, a typhoon, a further earthquake, or just a failure to stop a complete meltdown of just one of these four reactors, we can picture a strange new remnant of Japan emerging. Most people would live in the extreme south of the country, connected to the far northern islands by a transit-only causeway, running, as they say, like an isthmus up the west coast of the country. That is a worst-case scenario. There is a worst-case scenario, the end of Japan, but that seems like such a tiny possibility at this time, I won't even talk about it. I don't believe that will happen. Of course, like you, I hope the evacuation zones are limited to the four prefectures around Fukushima plant, plus all the fishing banned off the central Japanese east coast for a long period of time. That would be a horrible loss, but bearable, for people who have shown their ability to overcome terrible losses. We don't have time in this bulletin to discuss the economic spin-offs around the world. The Tokyo Electric Company has lost 70% of its stock value, which is an awful thing for the mainly Japanese investors and pension funds. TEPCO is currently seeking $36 billion in loans from private banks. I don't know if they'll get it. The Japanese government has already announced it will help cover some of the damage costs so the taxpayers pick it up. Many analysts say that although the company is too big to fail, powering so much of Japan, but nationalization is not out of the question. As in places all over the world, car plants in the United Kingdom are preparing to shut down due to the loss of parts from Japan. The ripples from this disaster, as other nuclear plants are scrapped perhaps and power prices go up, they're huge and unknowable at this time. This nuclear disaster may even spark a worldwide economic and political crisis, for all we know. I hope that doesn't happen. I'm Alex Smith. Find our latest programs at ecoshock.org, keep up with our blog at ecoshock.info, and be sure and hear our feature interview with Dr. Helen Caldicott. Thank you for staying tuned.